Welcome one and all to this special festive edition of Rack Addict After Hours. You're listening to Ben, Peter's here as always, and because it's special, we are now in our ancestral home, the pub, next to the shop. You will never know which pub or which shop, but we have a guest here today. Sam is with us. Welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Are you keeping warm? Because it's bloody cold.
It's very cold. It's very cold.
Just a smidge, but we will make do. We've got a heater. And of course, we must start every podcast in exactly the same way because variety is bad for podcast listeners. I don't know. Pete, what have you been doing in the very short time since the last I saw your face?
Well, there's a lot of things I haven't been doing because I had my debit card details hacked in some way.
That sucks. What happened? Well, that happened.
Yeah, that happened. I'm not really sure. All I know is that I got a text communication from my bank saying that someone had attempted to purchase goods of around, I believe it was £760.
How wow. dare they?
And they'd done it by phone. So they had the card details, my name, possibly my address, and the three-digit code on the back of the card.
That's no good. But you had your card with you, I assume.
The card never leaves my side. And so I can only surmise that one of the online retailers that I purchase all sorts of things, including much audio equipment and so forth, has had their system hacked.
That's bad news indeed.
Yes, quite perturbing.
I imagine the fraud team at your bank has dealt with you okay? Because you don't seem to be wailing and screaming.
No, they were very effective. They immediately blocked the purchase.
Excellent.
And I also contacted the company that the
fraudster
was trying to purchase goods from.
Will you be able to tell us, or is that a risky bit of information to be peddling
no,
on the internet?
It was a company that sold sort of work clothes and day clothes. Stuff and just supplies for offices and factories and that type of thing.
It was unexpected.
Very random.
Hmm.
I spoke to their sales team. They did remember the particular caller, and he'd also attempted to purchase the items with several different cards.
Ah.
Oh dear.
Right. Got it.
So who knows? Whoever has had their system hacked certainly isn't admitting it.
Well, good thing you're safe and sound where you are, and that card, I imagine, has been cut into many small pieces.
It certainly has, and I have received a new one.
But, good stuff.
I'm going to be extra cautious when I purchase online, and I may try and exclusively purchase with PayPal.
It's a good stand.
Because then I don't have to hand over the card details to an online retailer, either through their website or verbally over the phone.
You could get a Monzo account, because you can create temporary cards to use online. This episode of Rack Addicts After Hours is not sponsored by Monzo. Continue.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I'm just going to be ultra cautious. I'm already very careful, and it certainly hasn't been a situation where somehow the card has got out of my possession or anything like that. Mm. I haven't revealed those details to anyone I shouldn't have done. So, yes.
Be as careful as you like and it can still happen.
Yes, certainly it can.
That's no good.
First time it's ever happened to me, anything like that. You always hear stories about that sort of thing, but it's never happened to me thus far. But alas, now I have become a victim of online fraud.
There we go. Anything else from your week?
No, I was sort of slightly stifled. I didn't have a card. I couldn't buy anything. I couldn't do anything. And it was too cold to, anyway.
Fair enough.
Hiding indoors.
Sam, what have you been up to in the 26 years that I've not known you for?
Oh, I mean, that's a big conversation, that one.
And of course, where were you born? Your mother's maiden name and the first five digits of... anyway.
Of my bank card. not much on the lead up to Christmas. Been gigging as much as I can, which has been fun.
In what sense? Are you instrumentaling or are you behind a desk?
I am behind a desk.
Ooh, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'm a sound engineer. I work freelance and with a business. It's a specific band called...
Feel free to give yourself and your bands giant plugs on the Rack Addicts After Hours podcast. We love that.
My Instagram is samfrost_music.
Excellent.
Nice and easy to remember. And I work with Ronnie Scott's Rejects a lot of the time. Is the main band I work with. We do a lot of cover sessions. Recently done some stuff in London's Battersea Park, which was fun. Did the fireworks.
I want to go there and see the shopping situation.
Insane. Genuinely nuts. But they've got a big park there, big exhibition centre there now. Times Christmas party this year as well. That was very, very fun. But yeah, beyond that, just Christmas shopping.
Nice. Well, it sounds like it's going well for you as a sound engineer.
It's a strange time at the minute. Very, very odd. start of the recession.
What's the atmosphere like? Well, excluding the financial difficulties, because I guess those are slightly more obvious, but in the weird post-pandemic small venues struggling, big venues only getting big bands, how are you surviving in the kind of small-ish fish pond?
Yeah, it's odd. It's the kind of thing where if you have the chance to get gigs and you are willing as a band, if they have the chance to get it, they're dying to get it. And a lot of the bands that I work with, and they're any gig they can get, they're going for it.
Right.
But I think the problem is
no space to be choosy.
Exactly. So there's a lot of bands that shouldn't be playing as smaller venues as they're playing.
Right.
Which you can't complain at, to be honest, because it's good experience.
Yeah.
Working in a small venue, big venues, you've got to keep chops up in both because it's a very different environment.
Absolutely.
Especially mixing. If you are in a small venue, you've got to take into account that the drums are probably going to be louder than PA.
What's the term for that? It's sound reinforcement. That was the thing, isn't
it? Yes, 100%. Whereas with a bigger setup, you know, you are the master of everything, which is a
more
strange
toys to
thing
play with a little
bit. when you're far enough away that you can't actually hear the drum kit, it's quite a nice feeling.
Wonderful. Well, I know some small things about live sound, so I think as a fellow nerd, and hopefully our audience are also nerds in their bathtub, I always assume our listeners are in a bathtub somewhere, lots of bubbles, little rubber duck somewhere, I assume. Anyway, what are your favourite tools of the trade? I have prepared a few conversation topics because we're not doing news today. But one of them is kind of a best gear type situation. So in your sound adventures, what have been some little lifesavers, tiny adapters that saved a show? What are your favourite desks to use? Because you might not always get to use your favourite one. Favourite mics that just work every single time?
Well,
lots of pressure on you, but please let us know because we're all nerds about music technology.
Well, microphone wise, SM57. There is nothing. They are
just
the best microphone.
Are those 57s under
these
those
are
big 57s. Windshields? You're listening to Pete and Sam through 57s, and I'm using a Shure SM7B.
Which is just a 57.
Apparently it is.
Yeah.
Same capsule, different
transformer, other bits. I think it's a different transformer.
Oh, those fellows at Shure, they know what they're doing.
They do.
Anyway, I've derailed you.
Continue. No, SM57, greatest mic of all time. It works on literally everything. Put a bit of foam on it and it's a vocal mic.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on every drum, it works. Put it on guitars, it works. Bass, get away with it.
If you have to.
Yeah, it's the greatest mic of all time, and I can't speak highly enough of it.
Wonderful.
But I have been really enjoying the SE Electronic stuff recently.
Which is your favourite of the SE range that's helping you out?
V7.
Which one's that?
Yeah,
what is it?
It's their SM58 equivalent.
Okay.
So it's a supercardioid instead of a cardioid polar pattern, which is really good for
kind
rejection.
Like the Beta 58.
Yeah, very similar, which is great for rejection. So, so good. Especially if you're on a very noisy stage.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have long set up as well. It's great. It's really, really useful.
Good to know. How do you find their drum mics?
Their drum mics.
Because they do lots of kits, don't they, for low prices.
I have to be honest, I've only tried their overheads. I've heard good things of their snare mics and their tom mics, and I love the overheads.
Nice.
Sound very good as room mics as well. They do some large diaphragm condensers that sound fantastic.
Good stuff. Okay, small venue.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm not going to name the local one that's just over there because then people would know where we are, and that's not fair. Small venue, drums are very loud anyway. What kind of desk would you really want to be behind?
Well, I've just put a deposit down.
Ooh.
At the shop.
Ooh.
At the shop.
The shop.
The shop. For an SQ5, an Allen & Heath.
Uh-huh.
And I have to be honest, it's my favourite small venue desk. It's so super flexible. You get 48 channels, only 16 on board, but it's expandable.
Yeah, with the old...
good old S-Link. And you have Dante as well.
What's the thing called? Who cares? Continue.
It's all over Ethernet.
Yeah.
So you have one stage box and one cable goes to the desk, which
Brilliant.
Is really useful. Sounds fantastic. You get some really good plugins with it. They do a lot of proprietary plugins as well. So 1176 recreations.
That's cool.
You get some LA-2A stuff in there as well. You have to pay for it.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know they had that kind of system in that desk.
Yeah, so it's from the D-Live system, which is their top tier. Really expensive. You see it
cool.
on, you know, Billie Eilish tours,
right,
kind of that sort of thing. But really, really useful bit of kit. And I find that the Yamaha TF series, the Midas desk, even something like a Behringer X32.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with it.
So the one you've gone for, is that X32 compact form factor?
Yes.
Or is the producer smaller? I can never remember.
The producer and the compact, I believe, are the same fader count.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but the compact is the Behringer version, and then you get the Midas producer.
Mm.
But I also believe there are three models of each that are slightly different.
Very
I couldn't
confusing.
Tell you the difference. I know there is a difference, but I don't know what it is off the top of my head.
Mm.
But even then, all fantastic desks. And I think the thing is, everyone says, oh, you need digital desk. You need, if it has enough inputs and in good preamps, you're fine.
Lovely stuff. And of course, all down to the ears and the mind of the person behind them.
To some extent, yeah, to some extent.
Pete, you've probably had longer to find those shining pieces of excellent gear than actually probably Sam and I combined. So there's got to be some. One little nubbin that's absolutely saved the show, made your studio work perfectly, or been a trusted companion for many, many years. What do you reckon? Ooh, it's going to be that one Behringer synth you hate. Okay, whatever. I'm joking. It's a terrible, terrible joke.
The sort of things that I found really useful in the long term, I would say, is things like my Tascam DR7.
Is that one of the portable recorders?
Just a tiny little handheld recorder.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember how long I've had it. I've had it forever.
Mm.
And it just works.
Yeah.
It's just very uncomplicated. I've got a dead cat for it.
Oh, yeah.
Or most probably more describe it as a dead mouse because it's quite small.
Oh, yeah.
Basically a windshield. And that really changes the dynamics. And I've also got a like a small handheld shock absorber. So you could, like a handle,
oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
can walk around with it, and it's just brilliant for doing field recordings, getting those found sounds in and all that sort of thing. And the addition of the wind shield really makes it completely different.
Nice. I mean,
you can be out, as you most probably know from experience, and if you're trying to record something outdoors, you don't think there's any kind of breeze, but the mic does.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And it's just shearing across the front, and it's just horrible. With one of those, suddenly you get kind of studio quality sound, and you can be anywhere. I mean, yes, if you were standing in a hurricane, I think it would be. But generally, on the whole, it just really works really well.
Brilliant. Is that what you took on that trip when you did some London Underground stuff that you played
on a show a million
years ago?
Yeah, that's the sort of thing on trains.
Yeah, that's great.
In atriums of large stations, in museums, all that sort of stuff, just picking up all those reverbs and those ambiences and the sort of squeals and footfall and noises of people babbling, talking, and you can't really make out in the distance and so forth. No, just an excellent, really reliable, pretty much just switch it on, press record, and there's not too much fancy stuff going on.
Nice one.
That's the main thing that I can think about.
Got it. Unfortunately, when I was thinking up a few questions to get some general conversation going for this episode, I've sold and bought so much stuff that I don't know that anything that I currently own has been with me since the beginning. My journey into soundy musical stuff probably began in however old I was when I was in year 10. Sam, I can't remember.
Year 10?
Yeah, what's that? 14?
Is it 14? I think it's 14. So 14, that kind 15.
Of, yeah, that kind of ballpark. Like, maybe I've got a really old guitar cable or something, but it has to be slightly more recent acquisition. Oh, it's the microphone that I'm talking through right now. Of course it is. It's been such a great investment because it's been on every Rack Addicts episode that hasn't been outside since I got it. And it's just great. It might have got me a job, actually. Oh, well done. Well done.
It certainly earned its keep.
It's just brilliant. It just works. One thing that might be interesting to both of you, and I know, Pete, you're interested as well, the Electrovoice RE20, that's something we're curious about. Because it kind of sits in a similar plane to the 7B, doesn't it? Because it's not U87, which is just the vocal mic, or to be honest, it's just the mic for anything if you want it to be. But in the world that we inhabit, voice, U87 is the pinnacle, around about $2,000, probably.
About two and a half now.
It's gone up recently.
Of course it has, like everything else. But yeah, the Electrovoice, so it's a weird level playing field, and I do want to try one. Hopefully we can one day.
Yeah, they're pretty pricey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they do the cheaper version as well, which is supposed to be very good. They
do
a black
one.
Version that I believe is a bit cheaper than the
this classic silver.
The classic silver.
Oh. Mm.
How does it differ from the...
It looks the same, doesn't it? Just black.
I don't know. I have to be honest. It is black. I believe it's a different capsule.
That could potentially be fundamental to the sound of the Dubury.
But I haven't tried one. I've only ever tried the silver one, but I hear good things. Very good things.
One day. We'll get it done. Conversely, we must now enter into a slightly embarrassing corner of the world. You've been a sound engineer for some time. There have to have been times where everything just went wrong.
I forgot to turn the master on. That was a bad one.
I'm not seeking to embarrass you here.
No, no. Well,
the thing to embarrass
everyone's
is
done it.
The gear.
Ooh.
When has gear absolutely
when
let
gear.
You down?
I was doing a festival a couple of years ago.
That's a stressful environment.
Very stressful.
You do not want your gear to be
very stressful.
One of those.
Well, it was one of those where the headline band was on, halfway through their set.
Yes.
And it was just myself running the festival with a couple of stagehands. It was quite a long day. Everyone
did
was
you have anyone
tired.
Doing monitors, or is it just all you?
All me. Ooh, and then it was with an iPad. So desk was side of stage.
Oh, no.
And mixing monitors and front of house from an iPad.
That takes some beans. Good stuff.
It's a fun one. And
type two.
Yes. Mm. And a small child, ran behind the PA and managed to kick out the entire system.
Ooh.
And the whole thing made a massive crash as it came out, because it was all powered with amplifiers and the amplifiers all had a fit, and it was hell.
So you would have just removed the load off the amplifier.
Yeah, and of course the amplifiers then have a freak out.
Yeah.
So that happens as the cables are leaving. Thankfully, quick fix.
Mm.
But considering this poor band is in the middle of their song and the whole PA's gone.
Oh, man.
Everything.
At least it was an obvious one, I guess, in that case.
Yeah. I mean, there have been worse.
So, never employ children.
No.
What have we learned?
No,
that's
never
what
employ
from this one.
Well, never let children anywhere near AV equipment.
Yeah.
I learned that day that barriers are a thing that needs to be used no matter the situation.
Well, if you don't have these failures, you don't learn.
100%. 100%.
Pete, I'm going to try and think, but have you got any bit of gear, absolute disaster, it's just totally letting you down?
In a live situation.
Doesn't have to be live. Could be studio stuff, and it's just the most frustrating thing ever, and it immediately goes on eBay.
Well, it's not so much it immediately goes on eBay, but I did have a bit of a tense situation recently with a pair of Bose S1 Pros.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. No, I do remember. Do tell us.
So I did I don't know what you call it.
A memorial thing? Of it. Thing?
I did use them in anger at a venue the previous week to when they didn't behave themselves.
Yeah.
And everything worked fine, and I'd created... It's a sort of party situation where you get them to talk to each other via an app on your smartphone, and it works very well. You join one unit to your smartphone, then you join a second one, and then you decide that they're going to play together, and it just decides who's going to be left and right, and it all works out, or you can designate it, or whatever you want to do. And the following week, when I went to use it, assuming that it had all been programmed, I just could not get either to play properly together as a pair. One would come on, and then I'd fiddle around, and then the other one would come on, and the other one would go off, and it just ended up, I just used one eventually. Just really frustrating. You get that sort of time compression thing where time is just eating away,
and
people are gathering. And
staring at you.
Yeah, it's all getting very tense and embarrassing. The worst thing was the second week where I had all the problems. Initially, it was just to play music and backing stuff, but then I had to do quite a delicate speech, let's put it that way. And that's why I had the system there. And I really nearly lost my lunch over the whole thing.
It's a gut-wrenching feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just horrid. Horrible. Just
it's horrid.
Super stressful.
Absolutely.
But I love the thing, so I won't be selling them.
Well, I mean, you invested in wonderful flight cases for them as well.
Yes, exactly.
For my gear disaster, I think I have to go back to 18-year-old Ben. This was when he actually played guitar, back in Dare. So the school I went to, we had an arts festival kind of thing at the end of every year, which was super cool. Drama, music, art, music, more drama. And my guitar teacher ran the rock band every year, and he picked an album, like a famous album, and he'd put together a band to play it. It was pretty cool. There were four or five shows indoors and then one big outdoor show using Astra Sound Services, brilliant live sound company that I did a lot of work experience for. We love Astra Sound people. Anyway, first year I did it was Michael Jackson's Off the Wall, which is an album I now the only Michael Jackson album I will listen to. Anyway, the second year was supposed to be the Rolling Stones. I have no idea what album it was, because we had a mutiny, because we all hated the Stones, and decided it's going to be Led Zeppelin this year. Because we had a really talented drummer who could do the single kick pedal really fast thing from... Is it Good Times, Bad Times? With the... That thing.
Oh, God, yeah. That whole technique where you're playing the triples.
That's
the
one. I'm not enough of a technical drummery know-how, but it sounded awesome. So we hatched our plan, deployed to the guitar teacher, like, yo, look at this. This is a whole lot of backstory for the technical guff. So my guitar rig at the time, you a guitarist?
Yes.
Good, you'll know the stuff. I have a really nice Sir six-string, modern satin. It's my pride and joy.
Lovely.
At the time, I had an Axe FX 2.
Ooh.
Also amazing.
Ooh, very nice. You don't hear a lot of them.
No, I then traded it for AX8, the floor pedal thing, and
very nice.
I sold it, and that's how I got into modular. Anyway, that's an aside. But Axe FX 2, and I thought, okay, it sounds awesome. I ditched all the cab simulation and went from the line out into the effects return of, I think it was a Black Star, which is, you know, is fine. But with the Axe effects on the front, it sounded amazing. Mm. So that was cool. That was brilliant. And I thought, okay, I'm obviously going to have some kind of MIDI switcheroo to get my patch changes. And then I borrowed one from my guitar teacher. It was unbranded.
Oh.
You can see where this is going, right? Yeah. So I was trying to think of which song it was, but I had a fuzz patch for just a few notes, little phrase, fuzz, sounded amazing. And of course it happens on the first night. Everything goes wrong on the first night, doesn't it? I went into this fuzz section and I could not escape.
Oh.
Ooh, that sucked. So the way I'd set it up was on an Axe FX, you can do different scenes. So it's within the same preset, really quick change, well, instantaneous changes. You don't have to have that gap in the audio or whatever. Yeah, I just couldn't escape the fuzz. It was so bad. So that evening I went out to the local music shop and bought a Tech 21 MIDI Moose, I think it was, which never let me down again. So, yes, never go for unbranded MIDI switches, kids. That's the end of all things. There we go. My bad gear experience. I have more topics for discussion, and of course there's still more live soundy but potentially studio-y stuff in the live sound world, actually in the kind of general events production world. I've experienced this as well. All your technicians will kind of roll up with their Pelican 1510.
Oh yes,
of course they will, with various dividers. My favorite one was a guy rocked up, put his down, opened his lids, and brought out an electrically heated mocha pot.
They
which
are
was
so common.
Incredible.
So common.
I hadn't seen it before, and I was so impressed.
It's amazing. It's a tour must-have.
Yeah, he became my best friend. Also, another great live sound company that we will be working with on the Q121 project, SFL. We've used their studios before, and they had a really tall flight case, kind of about a little bit taller, maybe 6'10", that kind of height, one of those big ones, which on the side said crew morale, and it had a mini fridge, a kettle, and a microwave. It was brilliant. Anyway, back to the 1510s. Pelican 1510, that's your airline luggage size thing, and most engineers will have their get out of trouble kit. Sam.
Yes.
Pete, if you're in a studio, or potentially if you're going to do something, what little doodads would go into your get out of trouble kit?
It's gotta be every shifter, gender changer you can ever imagine.
Yeah, I was going to say a similar thing. All the adapters.
The meter-long adapter chain. Yeah.
You will almost always have enough XLRs or enough jacks. Mm-hmm. You will never have them in the right combination that you need them to be. So
yeah, maybe some little short cables, little selection of bits and pieces, little screw doodads, threads.
Electrical and gaffer tape as well.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
The fluorescent one is quite good. I don't know what it's called.
I don't know either myself, but it's very bright.
And a selection of quality tools.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Soldering iron, if you're feeling.
There's one, actually, Pete, that was on Tested, which is has a USB-C on the end, so you can get quite a lot of power into it, but it's like a USB-powered, really thin soldering iron. I really want it. It's so cool.
Convenient.
How do they generate,
gets good reviews from the Tested crew.
Okay.
I have to investigate. It's about 100 quid.
Okay.
It's not too much.
Where do you acquire such a soldering iron?
Amazon.
Okay.
It's one of those ones made in some Chinese factory, appears under a lot of different names, but never really changes in appearance, so you can normally find the right thing.
We always used to carry the little butane.
Oh, little gas ones,
But I've never found them that effective.
Mm.
Even the relatively expensive versions, they just didn't seem to get enough temperature up, and they're always a bit scary because they're on fire.
I have two final topics of conversation for this special seasonal episode. Both of you, think about the live shows you've been to. Could be musical, could be theatrical. I don't know if any of us are theatre goers, but live shows of some kind. Think, firstly, of the best one you've ever seen. I'm going to go first, so I'll give you some time to think. And then we're going to go for the worst show ever. And we're going to dig into why. Because we're nerds, and we like to know if it's a technical reason for it being a disaster. I will go first, and I'm going to plug for my best live show of all time. And actually, this was in like a council hall, village hall or something. Void Null. That's right, Ian, I'm plugging your AV act. Void Null, Oh man, this was in Alton, yeah, like Village Hall or something, really small place, but they had a really crisp, nice projection. And this was the first show I'd seen after Heat Death. A lot of this sounds like random words, so I'm going to have to do some backstory now. Void Null. If you go back a bunch of episodes, you'll find an interview that we did with Ian from Void Null. They're a live AV duo. Ian does the A, and James does the V. And on the A side, we've got lots of modular, lots of synthesizers, lots of stuff. And they're big space and science nerds, so they do themed shows. And I mentioned Heat Death. The first show I saw, which blew me away, was about the heat death of the universe. And the show starts with a drone, lots of reverb, lots of modulations. And on the screen appears...
The future is death.
So, you know, you get the kind of existential dread kind of thing that they're going for, and they absolutely nail it every time. But this show in Alton was a step up in the visuals, super crisp, incredible animations, and really tied into the music really well. But there was more variation this time. I can't for the life of me remember what the theme was, but every time I've seen them, you just get sucked in to the vibe. And then leave thinking it's probably not worth living. But that's the message they're going for. They really create this atmosphere that I've never experienced from any other show of any kind of budget in any venue. They really make you question things and get sucked into the vibe. So that'll be my best one. We'll come back for terrible shows. What do you guys got? Either of you got a really excellent show to share?
I've got one that, again, will be really up your street.
Okay, brilliant. Lay it on me.
And that was in, I want to say, either 1979 or 1980. I saw Steve Hackett and his band.
Yes.
At the old Guildford Civic Hall.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
And I was sitting in the very front row. It was all very pleasant. We were all seated properly in chairs, not standing
proper
around.
Proper musical appreciation.
So right centre, front row, and yeah, just it was like they were performing just for me.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant.
Fantastic. Stuff. And the sound was really good. The whole performance was really good. Yeah, it was great.
That's great. Yeah, Steve Hackett is a prolific musician, still going with his classical stuff, his prog rock stuff. Genesis Revisited, if you get a chance to go see it. Oh, man.
Astonishing.
Have you seen it?
I have. It's incredible.
The guy they got to pretend to be Peter Gabriel is just excellent as well. It's, what a show. So this solo stuff, though, was it?
Yes, it was all his solo stuff with his brother on the flute.
Oh, wow. Nice. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yes.
Awesome.
I assume it was his brother. I'm sure it was. I'll edit this out of it. No, I'm pretty convinced it was his brother.
Brilliant.
Anyway, do you want my bad one?
Go for it, if it's ready to go.
Yes, it's ready to go. Around 1983, 84, possibly. I'm not really quite sure when. I went to see Talking Heads at Wembley Arena.
Arena. It's already going potentially problematic.
Yes, it was absolutely awful. And it was mainly down to the acoustics or whoever'd set the PA up. Mm-hmm. There was this horrendous slapping echo coming off various walls. And it was like there was another band in the next room. It was unlistenable almost. The whole, including the support act and Talking Heads themselves. It was just diabolical. And
you want a refund.
Yeah, I was just shocked because I was one of those gigs where you're so looking forward to it. And this is going to be great. Mm. This is going to be really good. And it was just the worst.
That sucks. It's your turn, Sam.
Oh, I would say the best one. And I always look at sound, to be honest, as nerdy as it is.
The problem is when you get into the kind of industry, you go,
difficult.
I don't know why they're using this particular guess.
You really can't help it. You can't help it. But it's got to be, and just as a tour package, I saw Lorna Shore play with Cabal and Distant.
Mm.
And Cabal in particular, their sound was astonishing. It's the kind of thing where with the really heavy, heavy, heavy music, it can turn into a mess real quick.
Oh, definitely.
Real quick. Especially when you've got, three guitarists on stage, you've got 50 million toms. It's it really turns into a mess. But for some reason, I don't know who was doing the sound. It was astonishing. The clarity was ridiculous. Yet it was still really loud, really pumpy mix.
Energy.
It was great. Yeah. It was astonishing.
Nice.
Genuinely really good.
I'm going to deliver my terrible show while you're brewing your terrible show, Sam. Most unfortunately, I think I might have actually mentioned this one already, but I saw John Hopkins in Reading. Have I told you about this one, Pete?
No, I don't recall.
Pretty cool venue. I think it's the Town Hall, so I don't know if it's an old building, but it was a vibey building. Cool architecture. Anyway, it was a kind of hybrid show. He had a desk at the back. You can see his chaos pads, laptop, and whatever else it is that he uses. But then he had his piano and a string trio, which I think might have been cello, violin, and acoustic guitar. I can't quite remember. So the absolutely beautiful acoustic sections, tons of reverb, ambient, just delicious. And then he would transition very smoothly and excellently into his DJ position. And then all hell broke loose. So I think it was the venue's fault or the engineer's fault. The experience was all you got was kick drum and kind of sub fart. You know, that really horrible uncontrolled just when it's just all low end and it's an absolute disaster. Maybe a bit more of a
sounds like
that
some,
one. Yeah.
Yes.
Sounds like something's tearing.
That's the one. Yeah. So, ooh. Those drivers are probably unhappy. So I'm pretty sure it was the venue slash the technician because it was just too loud. So you get kick drum. There's a little bit of something. Kick drum. Kick drum. What song is it? Kick drum. I don't know what song. Kick drum. And you had to try and guess what song it was by the little snatches of something you heard in between. And then a couple of songs in, they hit the power limits on the amplifiers. Ooh. And everything cut out for a couple of seconds. And everybody goes, you know how it's suddenly completely silent stage and everybody's, hang on. Song continues, keeps assaulting your ears. I'm so glad I had earplugs. Oh, man. And yet they trip the power things like three times. And people from behind me, from the mixing position, I assume, went to side stage and went, what's going wrong here? I don't know how they could have had it that loud or that imbalanced and just kept going. There's a tune, Emerald Rush, John Hopkins, which is just brilliant. And I did notice when it happened, it was pretty tricky to figure out that it was actually Emerald Rush because of the kick drum imbalance issue, but just gutting. I had brought my friend Matt, and this was the second live gig he'd ever been to. Previously, was it Bullet for My Valentine? I think might have been his first gig. And then he came to John Hopkins. He really loved it. But again, yeah, I was just disappointed that it wasn't excellent. Shame. Your bad gig, Sam. What do you got?
And I'm gutted to say it. Iron Maiden.
Ah, what went wrong?
Yeah, I went to see them in the O2. It was in 2017.
Oh, well,
there you go. Strange venue. I was in the Gods.
Right.
And I have never been to a venue where I have gone home and I am feeling sick because of how loud it was.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you earplugged?
I wasn't.
Whoa.
I was 16 at the time.
Oh, no!
And was like, I'm too cool for hearing protection.
Yeah.
Yeah, went home, laid in bed, and the ringing didn't stop for a week.
Ooh, that's really bad.
And it really was like a case of, it's similar sort of thing. You're hearing kick drum and then mud.
Yeah.
And it's trying to work out, you know, for an hour and a half. Is this The Trooper or is it Run to the Hills? Or is it Book of Souls? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was heartbreaking, but I have seen them again since and they are astonishing. Mm. I think it was just bad venue.
Yeah, I saw the 1975 in the O2.
Yeah.
And actually it was amazing. I was hanging on to the bar at the side of the mix position.
Ah, yeah.
Which I went with another friend who's also sound engineer-y studio man. So we went, we know where we need to be. So we fought through the gaggles of screaming girls and got to the position. And it was excellent. But yeah,
I've seen Royal Blood and it's a similar sort of thing.
Yeah.
In that the it depends where you are, I think, in the O2. Mm. If you're on the floor, the sound is so much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah, a couple of episodes ago, I was complaining about Evanescence being a disaster up on a private balcony.
And that's a busy sound as well.
Disaster.
Yeah.
You did catch some snippets of a vocal, but it was like your show, Pete, that you could really clearly hear the slapback off the back of the venue.
Yes.
So you just heard, it was just confusing. And we were right in the middle, so it's like your left and right ear had a different mix. It was bizarre.
Weird.
No good. Right, we're running out of topics to talk about, but I would be remiss if I didn't pick your brains about the prog metal stuff.
Hell
Pete,
yeah.
I'm very sorry, this isn't your scene, but it's got to happen. This is, of course, the first time I've met Sam, and I realise that he likes Periphery, which is my favourite band. I even have them tattooed into my flesh because I'm a nerd like that. And we were also talking about Sleep Token, brilliant stuff. Who else do you like?
It's so difficult because there's so many. I mean, some new ones that I've loved. I mean, Siamese, very good band.
Okay, I'm going to have to take notes later. We're going to get some recommendations.
Again, Meshuggah. You can't go wrong.
The originators, some would argue.
The daddies of gent.
Yeah, of course they are. I don't know that they'd appreciate it, but...
Probably
you know.
Not, no. I mean, I think a big one for me is Polyphia.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
I've seen them a lot.
They've had a very interesting journey. Oh, you've seen them live?
I've seen them live about three, four times. All in small to medium venues. Mm-hmm. And each time I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
How are you doing this? And how are you doing this every night?
That's technically incredible. I saw them live once. And it was their bassist that did all the talking, which was his one of the Clays.
Clay.
Is the drummer a Clay as well?
He's a Clay. Clay.
Anyway, yeah, that was a brilliant show.
Astonishing.
I'm going to have to go back to the previous topic now because that was another disaster. Polyphia were great. Mm. This show was Nick Johnston Polyphia intervals.
Wow.
It was brilliant.
That's a
brilliant show. But Nick Johnston, incredible fusion-y proggy guitarist, right? Because he was on first, this was O2 Academy Brixton.
Good venue.
Most of the time. I saw Spirit Box there. It was absolutely incredible.
Thick.
That was my girlfriend's first big angry metal show. It was an experience.
And that's a big angry metal show to go to, Mike.
Anyway, back on topic. So, the thing I think they do at the O2 Academy Brixton, because it was the same on that Spirit Box show, first band, nobody was at the desk at any point in the entire show, which sucks. So, first act... with the Spirit Box show, it was more screamy, angry stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely unlistenable, just noise.
Yeah.
I don't think the drums were in the PA. Weird. And then Nick Johnston, it was all drums. I couldn't hear his amazing, because they had nobody
at the
desk.
The whole point of it, yeah.
It got marginally better with Polyphia. Like, you could hear all the parts, but it wasn't that crisp. Separation is the word that I think you used earlier. It just wasn't there. And then headline show intervals, absolutely the tits. I'm not sure if that was a hashtag plintervals... experience, but...
Mm. I think it's a shame. It seems to be the thing that the really good engineers in prog, particularly, have been snapped up. So it's
by the band?
By the big
bands.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's the kind of thing that if you're a good producer, you're a good sound engineer, you will find a really good band that wants to work with you.
Got it. Here's a question. Studio engineering, sound engineering for live stuff, very similar. Potentially very different. How have you found the skills transfer? Because I've done both, never pursued a career in both, so I wouldn't know how you excel in any of those areas.
It's difficult. I think in studio there's a big lean to analog. You want analog compression, analog EQ, analog this, analog that.
Giant fancy looking desk to impress the
people.
Which
makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds so good. Mm. It sounds incredible. Completely impractical. Live, it's more about getting to the studio sound whilst making compromises.
Right.
And trying to find that quality of sound in a less than optimal position.
Mm.
Particularly with mic placement as well and mixing as well. You know, if you're in a small venue, you don't have control of the drums.
Of course.
And that's such a big underpin of any mix.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make it really loud because you have to have the kick drum sound really good. You have to have the snare sound really good. You don't have to do that in a studio. You can sit it really nicely in the mix. So I would say a lot carries over. You're miking things up the same way, to be honest. You're doing a lot of the same skills. You're doing the same processing. Your signal chain's the exact same if you can make it. But you want to make sure that you're being as sensible as you can given the limitations you've got.
Wonderful. Well, it's been excellent talking to you both. We must, of course, end at some point. Otherwise, we'll probably freeze to death, if I'm honest. It's pretty chilly out here. My knees, pretty cold. The final segment of our podcast must be the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Pete, you're normally more prepared than anybody else. I've got absolutely no idea what I'm going to talk about. So are you ready to recommend us something to digest this holiday?
Yes, I am. And I've most probably recommended this channel before, but there is a particular video that was released this week that I believe everyone should watch. Now, the channel is Cold Fusion. You might be
familiar with it. Oh, yes, I remember the recommendation, indeed.
Before, it is a channel that features a narration on particular science and technology issues, often leading with cutting-edge technology and things that are on the horizon. And this week, the gentleman who does it, because I believe it's just one person that writes the scripts and then narrates it themselves and possibly does all the video editing as well, And yes, the channel deals with cutting-edge technology.
Indeed.
And also dips into the ramifications that some of this technology will have socially as well. And this week, the gentleman has done a video presentation, a commentary, documentary, whatever you want to call it, on the release of ChatGPT.
Oh, right, right. So is this the public can interface with the GPT AI situation?
Yes.
Oh, my.
And goes into it deeply because I believe from the vibes I'm getting from so many quarters now that everybody needs to pay attention to the latest wave of AI and the implications it's going to have, not only for a lot of people's everyday lives, but now it seems as though these new, very powerful artificial intelligence engines are going to eat their way into the artistic environment as well, which was the last bastion that was potentially going to be protected. It was always said that artistic endeavour needed the human element to make it work, but we are now seeing that that's not the case. So, yes, get your ears and eyes on and watch the latest Cold Fusion video on YouTube, which is entitled It's Time to Pay Attention to AI, ChatGPT and Beyond.
Scary stuff. We've got to pay attention. I'm going to go next, and because it's been a bit of a metal-flavoured episode in the latter half, perhaps, I'm going to mention a recommendation from Sam, not the one sitting next to me, the one from Wales who was on the podcast a good while ago. He is into a much angrier, sludgier and doomier sound than I. Black Tongue.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very good band.
Absolutely cannot get on board with that kind of stuff. But one that kind of hit the halfway mark between his area of metal and mine is Fit for an Autopsy.
Oh,
yeah. So this is a new band to me, but the track is called A Higher Level of Hate.
Oh, yeah.
If you're into your prog metal and you maybe want something a little bit more extreme, this worked for me. It has an interesting riff that it's just large. It's large with an O, it's large, thick with seven C's, it's chunky. Oh my. Big screamy time. So if you don't like your screaming, your harsh vocals, whatever you want to call them, you won't like it. But A Higher Level of Hate, that sounds angry enough, by the band Fit for an Autopsy. Sam, it's your first episode and you're going to have to round us off. What are you going to recommend to the listening public while they're in the bath?
I would say have a look at the Infographic Show. It's a fantastic YouTube channel that talks about everything potential, might happen, has happened. It's a very interesting channel that I think goes through a lot of quite strange topics that are both theoretical and potential, whilst also then doing history at the same time as well, which I find very interesting.
Good stuff. I imagine presented in an infographic animated format.
Yes, that's the one.
Good stuff. Thank you for listening to this special Christmas episode of Rack Addicts After Hours. I hope your bath was enjoyable. And I hope you're warmer than we, but we'll catch you in the next one. Farewell!